Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
So today we're starting this new series, Seussapalooza, and we're going to look over the next, today and the next 3 weeks at four beloved Dr. Seuss books and see if there's something that could change our life in them today. And you might think that sounds kind of fun. You might think that sounds really lame. I guess you'll have to come each of the weeks to find out which it is. But here's the deal. There are Dr. Seuss books we've all heard of, we've all read, we all love. But you may not realize this. There are some Dr. Seuss books that didn't become so popular. I don't know if it was a poor concept to begin with or the writing wasn't as strong. But some books that just never became so beloved. And I wonder if you guys might want to hear about some of those. So would you guys like me to share with you the top 10 least beloved Dr. Seuss books? Yeah, the top 10 least beloved Dr. Seuss books. All right, you're not very enthusiastic, but I am going to convince you this is worth it. The top 10 least beloved Dr. Seuss classics. Number 10, Oh, the Places You'd Go If You Weren't So Poor. See, you know, who wants to read that? It just makes you feel better, right? Number 9, The Grinch Who Stole Cable. You've never heard of that one. Number 8, Marvin K. Mooney, Would You Please Remember to Flush? Ew. Top 10 least beloved Dr. Seuss classics. Number 7, The Lorax Takes Prozac. Number 6, Did I Ever Tell You How Lucky You Are? And Other Pep Talks Bookies Give to Suckers Like You. Number 5, Are You My Proctologist? Some of you have been to the proctologist recently, I guess. Number 4, That Jerk Can Twerk, Can You? More current book. Number 3, The Shape of Me, Thanks to Spanx. Mm-hmm. Number 2, Horton Hogs the Hash Pipe. See, I don't even know if that's appropriate for kids. I'm thinking not. I don't know. And the number 1 least beloved Dr. Seuss classic, Watch Out, Steve, I'm Gonna Heave. There they are, the top 10 least beloved Dr. Seuss classics. All right. Hey, I got a really important Easter-related question for you. Who likes cream soda? Cream soda fans? Okay. Who has never tried cream soda? Have you never tasted cream soda in your life? Okay. It's okay. We're not going to judge you, but you've never, yeah. I love cream soda. Love it. And for the first few years of my knowing my wife and being married, every time I would have cream soda, I would ask her, would you like some cream soda? Because I'm a giver, you know? And so she would always say, no. And I would say, why not? And she would say, I hate cream soda. And it just always confused me. I'm like, how can anyone not like cream soda? It's delicious. And so one time I asked her again, hey, would you like some of my cream soda? She said, no, thanks. I said, why? She said, I hate cream soda. And in that moment, I asked her a question. Now, I don't mean to brag, but this is a question that only an advanced mind could think of. Okay, it was quite ingenious. I asked her, have you ever tried cream soda? She said, nope. I said, then how do you know that you don't like cream soda? She answered, I just do. I said, well, would you try it? She was like, I said, just take a taste. And she said, okay, I guess. And I gave her my cream soda. And she took a sip. And I may have just been imagining things, but I believe that the world stopped. Just paused in this moment of great anticipation until finally she drank it, looked at me, and she said, yum, I love cream soda. And so now my wife, like all good people, loves cream soda. Hey, let me ask, raise your hand again if you've never tried cream soda, never tasted it in your life. Would you be willing to try some cream soda? Because I brought some. I mean, we're talking Big Macs. We're talking cream soda. Like, I just keep giving. Who wants to try a cream soda? I'm not going to throw these. Don't worry. All right? That would be fun. Get some lawsuits going. Anybody on this side? Yeah?
I have two. I don't like it.
You don't like it? How? All right, I'll go this way. Here you go. And one up front. Here you go. That's my last one. Sorry, dude. All right. Well, report back to us. Who's tried it already? Taking a sip? Yeah? The people who just tried it, yeah, you like it? Thumbs up? Delicious? Yes? Who else got one?
Great?
Great? Yes, yes. All right, good stuff. You know, when I think about that story and my wife trying cream soda, never having tried it, finally tries it, realized she likes it, she hasn't been drinking it because she thought she didn't, it reminds me of the book, Green Eggs and Ham. right? In this book, you know, there's this guy who is convinced that he does not like green eggs and ham. And there's this other guy who knows he'd like it if he just tried it. And so he pursues this guy, and he pursues him, trying to get him to try green eggs and ham. And finally, he takes a taste, and he realizes he loved it. He had just never tried it. And when I think about the book Green Eggs and Ham, it actually reminds me of another book. It actually reminds me of the Bible. It reminds me of God. See, you may never have realized this, but God is a whole lot like Sam. Because Sam in the book pursues this guy, and God is pursuing you. God is pursuing you. You may not realize that. You may think of God as this distant, uncaring entity who maybe he exists, maybe he's in charge of the world, but he's not that interested in my life. But that is not the picture we get of God in the Bible. In the Bible, we see this God who is a tenacious, relentless pursuer of you. He's been pursuing you your entire life, and he will not stop. And the reason is because he loves you. He loves you, and he wants to be in a relationship with you. And the reason is also because he knows that what he has to offer you, that the life that you could have in relationship with him and living out that life, is really good. And if you just tasted it, then you would really like it. In fact, there's a verse in the Bible put on the screen for you, Psalm 34, verse 8. And it says, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." He's even better than cream soda. It's hard to believe. But God knows that the life he has for you and having a relationship with him would be something you would really enjoy. And so the Bible shows us and it teaches us and it tells us that he has been and will always pursue you, and he will never stop because he loves you and he wants you to experience his love. But a lot of us don't realize that. We don't realize that what he has to offer is something that we'd actually enjoy, right? And so we kind of have this attitude of, no, I honestly don't want God. I don't want Jesus. I don't want to be a Christian. I don't want church. I do not like them in a house. I do not like them with a mouse. I don't like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. Now, why do we say that? If that's your attitude, why do you say that? Well, there's a lot of different possibilities. Maybe you knew someone who claimed to be a Christian but did not act the part at all. Just an absolute hypocrite. And maybe that turned you away from the whole idea of Christianity. And if that's you, man, I don't blame you. Or maybe you went to a church, maybe growing up, and the church seemed to be more concerned with upholding their own traditions than with holding out the love of God. Or with raising money than with raising up people's spirits. And you thought, you know what, if this is what church is about, I don't want any part of it. And I don't blame you. I don't know what it is for you. There might be all kinds of reasons. You've gotten to this point where you think you don't need God. You don't want Jesus. You don't want any part of church. But here's the truth. You've never really tried it. You've never really tried it. You've never given it an honest chance. And we say we don't like it, but the reality is you don't know. You have not yet tasted and seen that the Lord is good. And so what God is going to do is he's going to pursue you. He is going to pursue you because he knows that you need him, you need his love, that you would love the life that he has for you to live if you would just try it. And that is the picture we get throughout the Bible, is of a God who pursues. It starts out in the first pages. In the first pages of the Bible, we meet the very first people, Adam and Eve. And God creates Adam and Eve, and he gives them this perfect garden paradise to live in. That's awesome, right? And he has them live completely naked. That's awesome. God lives in a perfect relationship with them. Like they experience him every day. They're living in this garden with God. That's awesome. God gives them only one rule. He's like, you can do anything you want. There's just this one thing you can't do. That's not bad, right? One rule, that's not bad. But almost immediately, Adam and Eve break that one rule. Almost immediately, they sin against God. So what does God do? Right? Now we have sin on our hands. These people have turned their back on God and sinned against him. What does God do? Does he give them a spanking and a timeout? D- Does he zap them with two targeted bolts of lightning? Does he make them, maybe just something much worse, like make them listen for 24 hours to that, "What does the fox say?" song? Because I'm telling you, like 10 minutes, that might be fun, but about 10 hours into that, nah, 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 like you're going crazy, right? Like that would be some torture. Or maybe God just turns his back on them. Maybe God says, "Listen, you turned your back on me, I turn my back on you," right? But that's what you deserve. It's not what happens. What God does is he starts playing hide and seek with them. Because Adam and Eve realize they sinned and they're scared about it. They don't know what God's going to do with it. And so they hide and God starts seeking. And God's first words are, "Where are you?" And he's drawing them out to reestablish relationship. And whether or not you take that story literally or you think it's more symbolic, it doesn't really matter, because the point that we're being taught is that when we sin, God pursues us. In the very next book of the Bible, it's a book called Exodus, we meet this guy, and apparently he has a bit of an anger management problem. There's this one day where he sees these two people fighting, and he jumps into the situation, but rather than breaking them up, he beats one of the two guys to death. Just beats a man to death with his bare hands. And because of that, he becomes a fugitive. He has to run because he's now wanted as a murderer, and he goes out and he lives in the desert. This guy's name was Moses, and God pursues Moses. In fact, God speaks to Moses. One day, he sets this bush on fire, and Moses goes over to check it out, and God speaks to him from this bush. And they have this incredible conversation where basically God invites Moses into relationship and into this partnership where he tells Moses, "I am going to do amazing and powerful things with your life." God sought out Moses. It happens all throughout the Old Testament. The Old Testament is the part of the Bible that describes what happens before Jesus came. There's another place where there's this guy. He's a very godly man, very good guy. In fact, he was a prophet of God. A prophet back then was someone who God would use to communicate to people. They didn't have the Bible, and so the way God would communicate was through these prophets. And this guy's name was Hosea. And one day, Hosea is praying, and God speaks to him. God used to do that. And so God says, "Hosea, I want to do something for you." And Hosea's like, "You do?" And God's like, "Yes, Hosea, I know that you're single." He's like, "Yeah, God, I've been praying for a wife." And God says, "Well, Hosea, I'm going to give you one." And Hosea's like, "Oh, thank you, that's awesome." And God says, "Sure, here's what you need to do, Hosea. You need to go to the local whorehouse, and that's where you'll find your wife because she works there." Hosea says, No. I don't want to marry. I've been praying about this perfect woman. I don't want to marry a prostitute, and I wouldn't be caught dead in a whorehouse." And God says, "Well, no, you are going to go into one, and you're going to marry one." And it gets even worse because her name is Gomer. And Hosea's like, "Gomer, God, are you serious?" And it turns out that Gomer is a beautiful woman with a very unfortunate name. And so Hosea does it. He obeys God. He goes down. He meets the pimp. He buys Gomer from this pimp and brings her back home and marries her and makes her his wife. And over time, Hosea is surprised by love. He actually finds himself falling in love, giving his heart to this woman. He never expected it to happen, but it does. And everything seems great. They have a kid, then there's a second and a third. But then, one day, Hosea discovers that the second and third kids were not his. And soon, Gomer leaves Hosea and goes back to her pimp. As you imagine, Hosea's heartbroken, and he's now raising three kids. Two of them aren't even his own. And one day, he's praying, expressing his anger, his displeasure, and God speaks to him again. And God says, "Here's what you need to do. I want you to go back, and I want you to purchase Gomer from her pimp again, and I want you to bring her back to your home again, and I want you to love her as your wife again." Hosea is like, you can't be serious. Why would I do that? And God tells Hosea this. He says, yes, I'm serious, and here's why. Because I'm using you as an example of me. This is how I love people. And everyone I give my heart to turns away and walks away from me, but I still love them. And I will take them back, and I will love them again. And so Hosea does it. He goes back to the pimp, and he has to repay and buy back his wife. You want to hear a kind of funny part of the story? So back then, they sometimes paid money for things, but sometimes they would barter, you know, like you give a chicken or you give some grain or something for something. And so we're told the exact price that Hosea paid for Gomer to get her back. He paid some silver and he paid some barley, okay? Well, back then, one of the units of measurement was a homer, like we have a pound. And so the Bible tells us that Hosea paid a homer for Gomer. That's awesome. There you go. And so he goes back and he buys back his adulterous wife and he loves her again. And he did it to show you and me what God is like. And so if you've ever wondered, or maybe you're even sitting here this morning wondering, after all the things I've done, I mean, if you knew all the things that I've done, could God still love me? Would God still take me back? Could God love me again? There's your answer. The answer is yes. All through the Old Testament, we see God pursuing people in love so that they would taste and see that he is good and the life that he has for them is good. And then at the beginning of the New Testament, kind of the second part of the Bible, God comes down from heaven and pursues us himself through his son, Jesus. God sent Jesus, and Jesus pursued people, people who had walked away from God. Not the good people, not the religious people. Jesus pursued the messy people, the people who had no interest in God and had turned away. In fact, the thing that Jesus was often called was a friend of sinners. Because that's who Jesus hung out with, was the sinful crowd. And then Jesus was killed. And the reason he was killed is because he was going around telling people that he was actually like God in the flesh. And the religious leaders did not like him saying that. But what really made them angry was that here's this guy claiming to be God, and he hangs out with sinful people. Because they thought God has no use for sinful people. But boy, were they wrong. Because Jesus was God, and he had come to bring messed up, sinful, broken people back to God. Because God still loves them. And so they arrested him, and they tortured him, and they put him on a cross, and he died. And so Jesus is now hanging dead on a cross, and then they put him in a grave. And it seems like the pursuit is over, right? To everyone watching, it's like, okay, God had come down from earth, maybe. Maybe he really was God. But the pursuit is over because now he's dead in a tomb. But then 3 days later, on the original Easter, which here we are celebrating it today, Jesus walked out of the grave alive, and the pursuit was back on. From cover to cover, because of his love, God is a relentless, tenacious pursuer of people. One time, Jesus told a story to kind of illustrate God's heart for people, and it's in the Bible in Luke chapter 15. I want to read it to you, and we'll put the verses on the screen. If you don't own a Bible, if you're like, man, I don't even think I have one of those, we actually give them out for free. So there's like a stack of them back at the Velcro Bar. The Velcro Bar is our connecting place. If you want to meet somebody today, if you have questions to ask, want to sign up for something, that's the place. But you can also just grab a Bible. You don't have to talk to anybody if you don't want to, and our gift to you. There's also a Bible reading plan if you want to use that. So here's what Jesus says, trying to explain who God is to people who didn't understand. He tells a story. He says, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. And then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep. So the deal with this story is that it's not really about a shepherd and sheep. Jesus tells this story kind of symbolically. It's more of an analogy. It's kind of metaphorical. This is what I do when I say the word metaphorical. You can do that too if you'd like, metaphorical. Is it good? So the idea is that this is really about God and people. This story is really about God and you. The story is about you. And so the idea is that you and I are like the sheep. We've wandered away from God. We've gotten ourselves separated from him. There's now distance between us and him, but God is like the shepherd. And he is not okay with us being separated from him. He is not okay with us being distant from him. And so he goes pursuing. He knows that that he loves us and that we would love to experience his love if we really knew what it was like, and we would love the life that he has for us, so he pursues us. See, God has been pursuing you your entire life, and he will keep pursuing you. He will never quit because he wants you to taste and see that the Lord is good. He's even better than cream soda. That's actually my story. Some of you have heard some of my story. Most of you probably haven't heard any of it, but I did not grow up in church at all, never went one single time. My mother's Jewish. My father was a professional poker player here in Las Vegas, and they never took me once. I don't know if I ever met a Christian. I knew nothing about like God or Jesus or Christianity growing up, and what I didn't know all that time was that God was pursuing me, and I had no idea. Check this out. Back in the early 1980s, there was a guy named Brent Curtis. I've never met Brent Curtis. Brent Curtis, in the early 80s, became a Christian. Brent Curtis, that Christmas, gave his sister, Missy, a Bible for her Christmas present. Missy was angry. She didn't want him forcing his religion on her. She thought it was just a jerk move. And so, thank you very much. Took the Bible, threw it with her stuff, with her books, and forgot about it. Several years later, Missy graduates from high school, applies to colleges. Her first college, the one she really wanted to go to, didn't accept her. So she went to her second choice, which was the University of Buffalo. University of Buffalo is a school of about 28,000 students, and every week of the summer, they have freshman orientations for a couple hundred of the students that are coming in as freshmen. So Missy signs up for one of the 20-some weeks of summer orientation, and she goes, meets these two girls. One night, they're walking along a sidewalk. There's a dorm right next to them. This guy hangs out the dorm window. He's up like five or six stories, and he says, "Hey, girls, what are you doing? Come on up. We're having a party." Really, there wasn't much of a party. It was like five or six guys up there drinking by themselves, nothing he would call a party. But these three girls have nothing to do, and they're young and dumb. And so they're like, "Okay, what room are you in?" And they go up to this party. And so Missy walks into this room. I was one of those dumb five or six guys who was drinking in that dorm room. And so I meet these three girls. "Hey, how you doing?" We talk for a while. Everybody ends up leaving and forgot about it. So school starts like a month or so later, and again, 28,000 students. I'm walking down this hallway, and I basically almost like bump into this girl, and I'm like, "Oh, sorry." And I was like, "Oh, I met you at orientation, right, at the party?" And she's like, "Oh, yeah, hey." And so I was like, "Man, I don't remember your name. I'm sorry." She said, "Missy." I said, "Hey, I'm Vince." And so we met, and we talked, and eventually, a couple months later, we start dating. About a year and a half after that, it's Easter morning, it's like today, and Missy is supposed to come over to my room for brunch. She was late. She was always late. And so I'm sitting in my dorm room waiting for her, getting annoyed, and so I turn on the TV in our dorm room. We only had three channels. They ended up getting cable TV into the dorm, so it was like a year or two later. So at this point, we only have three channels. And so I flipped through, and every channel had on what I consider to be a dumb religious show. And Easter morning makes sense, but it's like these stupid church shows. And I would have just turned the TV off, but the third channel had on something that looked potentially comical, and I couldn't turn it off. It was this old, old man. I'm not talking like old like grandpa. I'm talking like old like decrepit. And the weird thing, though, is he was sitting in this red leather overstuffed chair like this. Like the armrests were like, this, and he was sitting like this, and I'm like, weird. And he started talking before I could turn the TV off, and I'll never forget what he said. He said, "Now, we've been discussing the last week of Jesus Christ's life, and today I am going to talk to you about," And then I don't remember what he said. It was something from Jesus' life, but I didn't know anything about it. Jesus went right over my head. And then he said, "Now, most scholars believe that this event happened on the Tuesday of Jesus last week. But I will prove to you today that it actually occurred on the Wednesday of Jesus last week. As we look at the evidence," and he keeps talking. And that was the first thing I ever heard about Jesus in my entire life. Okay? And I heard that and I thought, yes, that is the stupidest thing I have ever heard. I mean, I admit I don't know anything about Jesus, but if he lived at all, it was like 2,000 years ago, and you're talking Tuesday or Wednesday. Like, you're talking about evidence. Like, what kind of evidence would there be for something from, like, 2,000 years ago? Turn off the TV and discuss, knock on the door. Like, right then, went out to brunch. But for the rest of the day, for reasons I could not explain, I couldn't stop thinking about that guy and what he said. Like, I couldn't stop. Like, just all these questions were in my mind. Like, why did he use the word evidence? I was a pre-law major. I ended up going to law school. And I was into evidence, and I was like, what kind of evidence would there be for something like 2,000 years ago? And why did he care whether it was Tuesday or Wednesday? And did anyone ever get him out of that chair? Just all these questions I couldn't answer. So that night, I went and I was studying in my girlfriend's dorm room. We usually sit in the library, but that night we were sitting in her dorm room, which happened once in a while, and I'm studying, and I looked up at her bookshelf, and I noticed that she had a Bible. Maybe I'd seen it in the past. I'd never noticed it. And so I said, you have a Bible. Why do you have a Bible? And she looked up at her bookshelf and went, oh. And she told me, it was one of the first times I heard the story. She said, my brother, blah, 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 and he gave me that Bible. He's such a jerk. And, you know, whatever. And I said, could I borrow it? And she's like, I don't want it. Like, take it. If you don't want it, throw it out. Don't give it back to me. I said, okay. So I take this Bible back to my dorm room. Now, I had never touched a Bible in my entire life, okay? And so I open it, but instead of, like, Genesis 1:1 in the beginning, and I wouldn't have known what to do, this was a student Bible. Brent had given his sister Missy a student Bible, which is a Bible designed to help teenagers dig into the Bible, teenagers who don't know where to start. It gives them reading plans, and so he had given it to her, hoping he could kind of get her started reading the Bible, and so I open it up, and it says reading plans, reading plan through Abraham's life, reading plan through Moses' life, reading plan through, and I'm like, I don't know who these people are, and so finally, I flip, and I see reading plan through Jesus' life, and I thought, okay, I'll do that reading plan. I mean, let's figure this out. Was it Tuesday or Wednesday? Let's do this right now. And so it says, read Luke chapter 1, then Luke chapter 2, then Mark 3, then John 3. And you check them off as you read. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to do the whole thing, but I'm just curious. Like, what's the deal? So I turned to start reading. Now, I had never read a Bible, okay? I expected it would read like a tall tale. Remember those were a myth? I thought it would start out, once upon a time, there lived a man named Jesus. And he did nice things for people, and he did miracles, and he had a blue ox named Babe, and he could lasso tornadoes. And I would just, you know, roll my eyes and throw out the Bible. But I was stunned when I discovered that repeatedly, what the Bible says, and you should check this out, is at this time, like this specific time in history, Jesus did this thing in this place. And then again and again, at this time, when this guy was the mayor of this town, this guy was the tetrarch of the region, this guy was the governor of the country, Jesus went into this town and he did that thing. And I'm reading it and like all my, you know, just my natural lawyerly kind of, it's like, oh, there would be evidence. Like you give a time and a place, you can go back, there's history books from that time, there's people who kept history, right? You go back and look, did it happen? 2,000 years ago, did it happen? Like, if it was a tall tale or a myth, you'd be like, when is once upon a time? But you tell me a time and a place, I can find out if this really happened or not. And so now I'm intrigued. And so I just keep reading because I don't know what the Bible says. And I learned for the first time in my life that the Bible claimed that there was a God who loved me and who wanted to have a relationship with me and who had sent his son Jesus to live for me and who had died for me so I could have that relationship with him and so that I could have eternity in heaven with him. And man, I didn't know if it was true, but I knew that if it was true, it was the most important truth in the world, and I had to know. And I also knew if it wasn't true, I could prove that it wasn't true. And if it wasn't true, I would spend the rest of my life making fun of Christians for believing something that wasn't true. And so I spent the next months. And I'm talking like 6, 8, 10, 12 hours a day, every single day, reading that Bible and going to the library and trying to figure out how I could find evidence to disprove it. Honestly, as I began to study the evidence, I didn't want it to be true, but it is overwhelming. I don't know if you've ever looked at the evidence. It's absolutely overwhelming. Like, there's evidence for the existence of God. There's evidence about Jesus' birth. There's evidence concerning Jesus' life. There's evidence about Jesus' death and resurrection. And then there's tons of evidence, I think the most convincing evidence of all, for Jesus' resurrection. That he actually, literally was dead and on the original Easter walked out of a grave. And it's really important. Because Jesus, as I mentioned, had walked around claiming to be God in the flesh, and he kept telling people, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stake my claim to being God on this. I'm going to be crucified, and then I am going to, after 3 days in a grave, walk out alive. If I do that, believe. If I don't, forget about me. That's a pretty big deal, right? I mean, and if he did it, that's pretty convincing, right? I mean, you give that a try. It's pretty good. And there was evidence for the reliability of the Bible. There was evidence, historical evidence, archaeological evidence, scientific evidence. And I just want to be honest with you. As I started reading the Bible, I didn't want it to be true. Okay? I wasn't like hoping to find Jesus. I was hoping it wasn't true. Why? Because even though I didn't know anything about Christianity or being a Christian, I assumed I wouldn't like it. I did. I thought I would not like it in a tree. I would not like it in a car. You leave me be. No, I assumed I wouldn't like it. And I didn't want to give up all the things that I was doing that I assumed Christians weren't supposed to do. Right? I was like, these are the fun things in life, and I'm pretty sure I'd have to give up the fun things, which means I would have no fun, and I'm not interested in that. But I don't know. I'm an honest person. And so I was like, I need to find out the truth, whether I like it or not. And so I studied, and the evidence is overwhelming. And eventually, I was like, it's obviously true. And the other thing that surprised me was that Jesus was amazing. And I started to realize that the only life I wanted to live was a life with him in it. And I decided to follow him for the rest of my life. And I had become a Christian mostly just because it was true. It was true. But what happened, what I found, is that it actually wasn't bad. I found that I liked it. In fact, I found that, to my surprise, that I loved it. And suddenly, my life was infused with meaning and purpose, which I had never really had. And I felt like I was like getting direction from God, and there was a peace that I had about things that normally would have like stressed me out, and my relationships improved, and I started to have this sense of adventure, like God and I were in this partnership to share his love with the world, and we're going to change the world together, and I actually discovered that I was having more fun, not less fun. I couldn't believe it. And then over the years, I look back at my life, and what I realize is that my story of how I ended up becoming a Christian, just all of it, right? Brent Curtis and the Bible, and it's a student Bible, and the cable TV, no cable TV, and the late for brunch, all of it. I don't think it was a string of coincidences. What I believe is that God was pursuing me. And he had a plan that had started years earlier, and I had no idea. But he was pursuing me because he loved me. And he knew that if I would just taste him, a relationship with him, what he has to offer me, life with him, he knew I would love it. And I have. That's my story. Maybe that will be kind of like your story. Maybe in a sense, it already is, at least in this sense. Perhaps there's something that's happened in your life already that has led you to a place where you believe in Jesus. Maybe some of you would say, no, I'm there. Like, I believe in Jesus because of my parents or the church. Whatever. I now have faith in Jesus. And so you would say, I am a Christian. In fact, perhaps you've been listening to this entire message thinking, this isn't for me. Like, this message is for people who have not yet tasted and seen. And I'm already a Christian. I've already tasted the life that God has for me. But have you really? Have you really? See, here's the deal. So many people get to a point where they put their faith in Jesus, but the truth is they never actually live the life that God has for them. They never even experience one day of the life that God has for them. And so they would say, I've tasted. And it's not that great. But the truth is, you've never tasted it. The truth is, you just believe in Jesus. And that's not the life. That's not the life that God has for you. Faith in Jesus is important. It's kind of like the key. It's the key that opens the door and allows you to walk into the life that God has for you. But faith alone is not the life that God has for you. The life that God has for you is about staying connected to Him, living in a partnership with Him, and having a growing intimacy with Him. It's about serving people, putting other people before you put yourself. It's about serving the poor out of a heart of compassion. It's about living in community with some other believers and kind of going on this faith journey together. It's about living a life of generosity. It's about engaging in an adventure with God of sharing His love with the world. It's about finding freedom in life through receiving and living out truth and through giving forgiveness. You do all that, and you can't do that on your own, but with God's help, you can do all that. You do all that, and that's the life. And it is so good. It is so much better. And some of you have experienced it, and you know how good it is. It's not perfect. It's not like, you never have a problem again. It's going to be perfect. It's not that, but it is so much better, and it is so good. And if you haven't tasted that, if you believe in Jesus, but you just believe, that didn't change your life any. And what you need to do is you need to taste and see that the Lord is good. Now, maybe some of you haven't even gotten to that point yet. You're like, not. I don't believe. I have not gotten to a place where I believe in this Jesus thing. I'm unsure about it at best. Here's what you need to know. You need to know that God is pursuing you. God has been pursuing you your entire life, and He's going to continue to pursue you because He loves you. And I wonder how God's been pursuing you. Do you see it? And I wonder how God will continue to pursue you. And I think some of it depends on the type of person you are. Maybe you're the lawyer type. You kind of have my personality. You're the investigative researcher. I don't believe anything unless you can prove it to me kind of person. And if that's you, God may pursue you by kind of prodding you to start doing the research and looking at the evidence. In fact, maybe a couple minutes ago when I said there's evidence like this and evidence and evidence and evidence, maybe there was something inside of you that said, really? There's evidence for this? You don't have to just have a blind faith. There's really evidence? Because if there's evidence, maybe I should check it out. And maybe that thought was God prodding you to say, come on, because He is pursuing you. And He knows that you will love what you find if you do that research. Maybe you're not the lawyer type. You're like, man, that's just not me. I'm not the prove it to me kind of person. That's not your personality. That's fine, because God will pursue you in other ways. And the truth is, He already is. But like maybe God has been pursuing you through a friend who you have, who has been talking to you a little bit about their relationship with God, with Jesus. Or perhaps He's pursuing you through a book someone gave you to read. And right now you're like, yeah, I did read that book. Or that person did give me that book. And I never read it, though. Or it could be that God's been pursuing you through convicting you. Maybe you've been looking at your life recently, realizing, I got some problems. I don't like to admit, but I've got some issues, and I don't know how to get out of it. I don't know what to do. I need help. That's God trying to get you to turn to Him. Maybe God's been pursuing you by revealing to you just how empty your life feels right now. And you've gotten to a place where you're like, I know I need something. I just don't know what it is. That feeling, that's God pursuing you. Or maybe God has been pursuing you, showing you the joy and closeness that exists in a community of Christians. And as you see these people who are sharing life together, you think, man, I want that in my life. And that's God pursuing you. Or maybe it's just that He has you here today. right? You think you're here because you got a postcard or an invite card on your door, you heard a radio ad, or maybe you had a friend or a coworker who invited you to be here. Maybe they had to invite you like 5 or 10 times and finally you've shown up. Maybe they got to the point where they were like calling you with death threats. Hello, Sydney. Do you want to die tonight? You know, you're like, okay, I'll come on Easter, right? However he did it, God has you here right now. And you might think, yeah, it's because of that card or because my friend, but I don't think so. I think that's God. And he has you here today because he loves you. And he knows that you would love what he has to offer if you would just give it a taste. Can I give you a next step? Obviously, it's up to you if you take it or not, but I want to give you what I think is the perfect next step for you. Whether you're the lawyer, prove it to me type, or you're not, whether you're somebody who already believes, but maybe you haven't really walked much into that life that God has for you, or you're someone who does not yet believe, I would tell you that the best next step is a 6-week course that we offer called Verge. It starts 2 weeks from tonight, okay? It's 6 weeks. It's like an hour and a half long. It's a little bit of a commitment, not that bad. I teach it. It's fun, and it would be a great way for you to get a little bit of a taste of what this is all about. So like in this course, we look at the evidence. Like we spend about an hour and a half of these 6 hour-and-a-half sessions looking at the evidence. And if you're the lawyer, prove it to me type, you will love that. You will love it. But we don't just look at evidence. We also spend time talking about who God is and about God's love for us and about how when we know who God is and experience his love, then you can't help but love him back. And we talk about what does it look like to actually live in a relationship with God, not just believe in him, but have a relationship with him. And if you take this class, I think what will happen is it will help you to taste and see that the Lord is good. And if you did that, do you know what you would say? Like if you got to a point where you tasted and saw that the Lord is good and that, you know, life with God is great and that church can actually be an incredible, like, part of your life, I think you would say, I like them. I do. I like them, Sam, I am. And I would eat them in a boat, and I would eat them with a goat, and I would eat them in the rain and in the dark and on a train and in a car and in a tree. They are so good, you see. So I will eat them in a box, and I will eat them with a fox, and I will eat them in a house, and I will eat them with a mouse. I will eat them here or there. I would eat them anywhere. I do so like God and church and green eggs and ham. Thank you, oh great I am. Let's pray. God, as I said earlier, we're all at different places, you know, and we all have different next steps we need to take. But God, I pray that in these next couple of moments that you would impress upon us the step that we need to take, that you'd meet us right where we're at, and that you would just show us the direction we need to go and what's the next step in that direction. God, thank you for being a God who loves us. Thank you that when Adam and Eve sinned, when Moses murdered a man, when I have messed up my life time and time again, that you don't turn away, that you still love, and you call us back, and you want to reestablish relationship, and you will love us again. God, thanks for pursuing me. And God, thank you that you've been pursuing every person in this room. God, I pray that maybe everyone in this room would look back and start to see the way that you've been pursuing us in love. God, would you help us to be found? Help us to come out of hiding. Because we need you. And if we taste, we will see that you are good. God, I pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen. We're going to have the band do one more song. They magically appeared as your eyes were closed. And I want to encourage you just to take this time to think about where you are at. And where do you want to be? And what might be the next step in that direction? You know, the truth is that a journey is all about taking one step at a time. And so what's your next step? Maybe your next step is to say, you know what? I was planning on just being here for Easter, but I'll come for the rest of this series. 3 more weeks. I'll be here 3 more Sunday mornings and see what's up. Maybe your next step is to say, I'll go to that Verge class. 6 weeks, I can do 6 weeks just to find out more and to see what this is really all about and if it's for me. Maybe. And so would you think about and maybe decide in these next couple of minutes, what's my next step? Okay. During this time, we also have communion available on candlelit tables around the room. Communion is a piece of bread and a cup of juice that represent Jesus' body and blood given for us on the cross. See, the deal is that Jesus took his pursuit of you and of me to the ultimate extreme when he gave up his life for us. He died so that we might have life through a relationship with God. And in communion, what we do is we thank him for that and we remember what he did for us. If you've said yes to Jesus and you'd like to take communion, please feel free during this song to go and get the bread and juice and bring them back to your seat. When you're ready, you can take them. So the band's going to play this song, and I just want to give you a couple minutes before we go back out to everything we have to do today to think about what is your next step and to take communion if you'd like.